Welcome back to the UK and Ireland Jets podcast. It's been a while since we last had one, but the Jets are a completely different team now. So we've got a jam-packed show. We're going to kick off straight away. And I'm going to head it straight over to you guys. And the first round selection, Quinn and Williams, what are your thoughts? Is another interior defensive lineman going to make the Jets a better team?
Well, all his ratings coming out of college saying that he is probably one of, if not the best quality player to come out of college this year. So we got to be happy with that. I think he's going to bring a great personality to the locker room. I think he's totally willing to learn and work on his craft. And I just think he's an all-round solid player. I mean, I know we always get defense and whatever, but you know, you can't argue with this. I personally think you can't argue with this pick. I know there may be some other opinions that may be vocalised tonight.
Oh no! I quite frankly love him. I think he's the highest grade interior lineman on PFF ever since they started doing it, which I think was 2014. I think so. For five years, he's the highest graded interior lineman they've ever graded. So, I mean, the thing is, I'd much rather had Bosa because I think he brings more to the table for what he can do. But no, I'm happy with the pick. Best player available. That's mentality, and that's what won Ravens their Super Bowls. So it's the way you have to go. You have to draft the PA.
What do you think, Sim?
Yeah, well, the one thing that I took from it straight away was the amount of Williams there are now on the Jets defense. And I just think that is the biggest impact he's going to have, is the fact that Leonard Williams coming out was meant to be one of the next best defensive linemen as well. And he just hasn't really lived up to expectation. But now you've got Quinnen and Leonard next to each other. I mean, offensive lines are going to have a lot of trouble containing them two. I think that's going to be his biggest impact, really.
Yeah, I think the problem with Leonard Williams is that he had that sort of really good couple first seasons, and then you had Wilkerson just fall off a cliff, and Richardson just wasn't there anymore. So I think realistically, he was getting given all the double teams, and he was just all the focal point for the offensive line was just focused entirely on him when they were rushing the passer. So I think he struggled, I think, because he's not had that sort of teammate to be able to help him out and be able to do the same thing. I think it changes now with him. I think it changes as well with Jachai Polite too. I think just adding more firepower to go after the quarterback and take sort of like double teams away from guys on that line, I think just helps. And bringing back Henry Anderson as well, obviously, a big thing.
I think this whole new start, new regime start with Gase coming in will provide a different kind of aura in the dressing room. I think after last season and the end of the season before, it was the players could see that there were problems, there were issues. The offense was stagnant, say the least, at times, especially with the play calling. And I think that may have had an effect on some players, not most Leonard Williams. And I think now with a new fire in their belly and a new defensive coordinator who is bordering on maniacal, it could really re-inject the likes of Leonard Williams and other players who kind of stagnated in the last couple of seasons. Maybe a semi-fresh start, as it were. So it'd be interesting to see. When you line up with other players with severe desire around them, it boosts you as well. We see this in all sports, and maybe I'm being optimistic, but I'm hoping that this allows a clean slate for certain players to maybe turn around recent performances in the last 18 months to two years, and they can push forward. I mean, the ethos that the likes of Jamal Adams that everybody talks about brings to a locker room, that kind of winning mentality, that winning desire, that hunger to want to be better every single day. It can only be a good thing. And I think with the new coaching staff that we've got in as well, this can only breed good things.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the coaching staff, actually, because I remember when Bowles was in charge, I don't think I ever watched a single press conference because he was just so boring. Yet this week, the press conferences we've had with Adam Gase, and especially Quinn and Williams, I mean, all of a sudden, we're now watching press conferences again. I don't know if either of you two see them. But Gase was how he was pissed off with the rumours about him and McCagnan. He was talking like proper football. You had Quinn and Williams, who was just looked like a little kid, big baby face, grinning. And it was like, it's exciting. I mean, it's not used to seeing an exciting.
It's good. I mean, I'm glad that Gase got pissed off. I'm glad he said that, and I'm glad he vocalised that to the press, because, you know, bringing everything down before he's even had a chance for a preseason snap is, you know, I'd be livid. You know, you go into and everybody's making up these, well, not making up, but like suggesting that there's a rift between him and McCagnan straight off the bat. He's like, "Whoa, no, give me a level playing field. Let's judge me when it counts. You know, don't judge me in May and when nobody's even, we haven't even got mandatory camps yet." So
I think the thing with rumours as well is that most of them have some basis in fact, and I feel like where this one's come from is you've given me nothing to work with offensively. But at the same time, I can't honestly see him being like there's a massive rift between the two of them because of that. I think he understands full well that they've just spent so much money on offensive talent in free agency on Le'Veon Bell and bringing in Assembly and players like this to help the offensive line. I can understand why he would be upset. I think he probably is a bit upset, but nowhere near the level that's been suggested. And they're professionals. No one's going to come into a job and be like, "Oh, I'm throwing chairs against walls and stuff," because they drafted a defensive lineman in the first round and they drafted the best player available in the third round, who probably should have been a first round pick if not for his off the field behaviour. I can't see where this rumour's come from, to be honest.
But the one good thing that's come about it in these stories, it's kind of baptism of fire for the coaching staff in the sense of welcome to New York, you know, this is going to happen. You know, you're going to get ripped apart if someone drops a catch on the, you know, a simple slant pass for a touchdown to win a game. They're going to be knocking on your door 24/7. So for this to happen in May, maybe it will just make them a little bit more aware that they need to be on point every minute of every day, because the press will be just there with their pitchforks and their torches ready to burn the place down the moment anything goes wrong.
I think it also shows that our head coach has a personality, which is nice. As Seb said earlier, you can watch press conferences now.
Yeah.
Our coach's got a personality.
But remember, personalities can sometimes get a little bit out of hand. We all remember Rex.
Yeah, but Rex was different, though. Rex would actually push his personality and he'd create rumours that he could go after.
If we could get a nice balance of personality with consistency and quality and shown improvement, that would be fantastic for me, personally.
And the rift between McCagnan and Gase actually links in quite well to the next question, is that obviously McCagnan all of a sudden came under this massive pressure during the draft. But there was also a lot of smoke that the Jets were doing everything they could to get out of the number three pick. Then they were doing everything they could to get back into the second round. And none of these trades happened. So do you think that's a failure on McCagnan's behalf? Or was it actually, it all worked out fine and how it was anyway?
I don't think it was a failure. It's difficult to trade back from that position. I think the difference is everyone's looking at it like, we traded up into the third spot last year. Why couldn't we do it? Why couldn't we do the reverse this year? And the reason is, who would you take at the third pick? We trade up for a quarterback. There were loads of surefire quarterbacks at the top of last year's draft. There were not really any this year. I mean, the Giants picked Daniel Jones sixth overall and got so much grief for it. And if you remove that from the equation, the next quarterback drafted was drafted 15th.
I think it's a combination of a few factors. I personally think, one, everybody knew that the Jets would try and pick up some more picks, so the quality of the offers they were going to get were going to be below probably what they expected. I think the demand for quarterbacks, like Ross said, was a lot less than last year, so there wasn't that full-blown fans breathing down our neck desire to have to really, really push to trade up. I think teams thought that they could pick up quality in later rounds. I just think that all those combined meant the desire and for needing to trade up wasn't there, and thus the quality of offers were below what the head of, you know, the likes of McCagnan was looking for. So, you know, it would have been nice. It would have been great to have picked up extra picks, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't happen. And you have to just, as we've seen in the past, take the best player off the board or even take a risk, sometimes like Jakai Polite that we took. So.
Yeah. I think at the same time as well, you see what you were talking about them thinking they're going to get talent later. I had, in the mock draft we did, John Elway taking Drew Locke 10th. And everyone, a lot of people thought, yep, that's what's going to happen. And so a lot of people who did mock drafts on NFL.com and ESPN and everything, Drew Locke number 10 which seemed like a sure thing. And they got him in the second round.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of the GMs thought players would fall. A lot of GMs thought the talent wasn't worth trading up for the third pick, I think. And with the second round pick we tried to acquire, as soon as I heard that we were trying to get it for it, and it would have been a lot, I think.
So
I don't think we would have. I don't blame him for not being able to get that. I know a lot of fans will, because I know they don't like McCagnan, but it's the way
I think that reflects well on McCagnan, in the sense of he knows that if this season's a bust, well, he's probably going to be very much on the hot seat, but at the same time, he wasn't so concerned that he was going to overpay, or, you know, so this wasn't a situation where he was showing any sort of panic, which kind of makes me think the ship's starting to steady more than it has done in the past.
Yeah, and I think at the same time, a lot of people forget that the 10-6 season we had, where he almost got into the playoffs, was pretty much down to McCagnan, Wheeler, and Dillon. Like, him getting Brandon Marshall and all these, and all the players that he got and the squad that he built, that was entirely down to him, really. It was not very much down to Todd Bowles. I mean, it was a bit, but it was McCagnan that really got us to there. And I think that a lot of people forget that. I mean, Jets fans have a short memory, so.
Yeah, very true.
Well,
be good next, one and hated the next.
Yeah, so the next pick in the draft after Williams was, as we touched on already, Jakai Polite. And he fell to the third round. What do you make of him? I mean, I love this selection. I think he's an absolute beast.
Yeah, I like the pick. I like the round it's at. I'm sure we've spoken about him before in previous podcasts, and I think some people thought second round would be a surefire. If we can get a second round pick, he's going to go there. I wouldn't have liked it if we'd have taken him in the second round. I think he's got too much of a question mark on him with the combine and how he's added so much weight. Like, you can't add that much weight and muscle, so you have to put on a lot of fat weight to be able to get up to that weight that he's gone up to. And I think that it's obviously affected him in his performance, so we need to wait and see. I think he can put on muscle now and lose that fat that he's obviously put on to get that weight, and potentially that can make him a better player. But the question marks are too much for me at two, but in the second round, sorry. But I think in the third round, it's the perfect time to take it, because how often do third round picks pan out to be starters? Not very often. He has the chance to do it.
I also think with the new type of mentality that's being bred in the locker room, a personality like his can be controlled. Okay, it's a big locker room. This is the NFL. There will always be people that stand out and push the boundaries, as it were. And, you know, seeing all the players turn up at the Jets facility and everybody looking modest and chilled, and then there's Jakai Polite turning up in a Thrasher tee and a man bag, smiling and pulling up signs. I was just like, okay, well, yeah, no, fair play. You know, you got a personality, but then we've got other players that got personalities, but their heads are screwed on right, and I'm hoping that rubs off on him. I'm not judging him already. I'm not sitting here and going, oh my God, you know, this is a real stretch. Will he be able to handle it? You know, he's going to start getting big boy money, you know, and he's going to have to pull out big boy performances, and will he be able to handle it if things don't go his way, and he's essentially shut down for a whole game because he just can't compete. But at the same time, third round with that raw talent, you can't complain. We've had other players that have been way more sensible and had a way better judgment on their character going through the draft process, and that just haven't panned out. So, you know, I think it's worth the risk. Was there an edge rusher that we could have taken in the first round that that would have been better, that we know could have been there for years to come and created problems for other teams? Probably, but at the same time, when a player like Quentin Williams turns up in your lap in the third pick, you've got to take that player. So I think they've done I think they've weighed up all the options, run the numbers, and just gone, yeah, it's worth somewhat of a punt.
Yeah, I think as well we've sort of got this little niggle on the back of our heads of sort of remembering all the locker room sort of cancers we've had over the past couple of seasons. Yeah. But at the same time, you have to remember a lot of these guys were guys who we relied on, and they saw themselves as the face of the team because of the performances. Santonio Holmes in Miami, everyone remembers that. Santonio Holmes was a receiver at the time. And Sheldon Richardson. Marshall was the number one receiver at the time, and Richardson was the best defensive lineman on the team and arguably the best defensive player on the team. So I don't see, even if Polite has this sort of cancer to him, I don't see it affecting the locker room, because he's not players look up to. So I don't see his problem. If it is a problem, just get rid of him. I can't see it as being that big of a problem, though, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go out and straight away say I think he's going to be the steal of the draft. I mean, he is essentially a first-round talent. I mean, don't get me wrong, you've got all of these worries about his mentality and his character, but just last year, he had 11 sacks, 6 forced fumbles, 19 and a half tackles for loss. Like, if he did not have that bad of a combine and that bad of an off-season, he would easily have gone in the first 20, 30 picks. And I think you mix him in with these characters we've now got of Jamal Adams and Greg Williams, who I'm sure will straighten him out if he does anything wrong. I think he's got the area and the team to be able to play really well now. I think he will deliver, really do.
Wow. Sounds like everybody's thumbs up for the pick then.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic.
But then at the end of the third round, the Jets then went and took O-line, which was a big, big necessity, in Chuma Adoga from USC, who used to be teammates with Sam Darnold. So what do you guys think of that?
Probably a good thing to surround him with them. But at the same time, the guy had the biggest character issues out of all of our draft picks, and it's all that's been spoken about him. We've not heard anything about his talent. We've not heard anything about how he can play, even though he's apparently the highest graded PFF interior offensive lineman for, is it pass rush or run protection? One of them. He's the highest rated. I think he had a 99.1 grade, which is insane. But I don't. Yeah, I think he's the biggest question mark out of all of our draft picks as to how he's going to cope, because he seems really immature. He doesn't seem like he could potentially cope with the NFL. If he can, I'll eat my words, but right now, on everything that I'm hearing, he sounds like he's a bust, even though he's been the third round pick, a bust waiting to happen, and could be a very big failure. Could even be out of the league next season.
Wow. So you've got big concerns for him. I mean, it's pretty much similar to Jakai Polite, and his talent's clearly there. If I'm not wrong, he won the MVP of the Senior Bowl, and he can do it all. But yeah, is he going to be able to kind of live up to the NFL? I mean, I think a lot of people have been saying that he's not even sure whether he liked playing football and stuff like that. I mean, that's not what you want to hear, really, is it?
I mean, it's. It is boom or bust in regards to whether personalities can handle the pressures of the NFL, like it is in most sports. And I think they obviously see that, again, like the Jakai Polite pick, that there are fundamental reasons why they've gone for him. Him understanding the traits of Sam Darnold is probably one. The fact, again, like I said before, that the locker room seems to be having a dynamic shift in regards to the professionalism that is hopefully now going to start running through the whole team and the whole organization. I think, again, they feel like they've got the players in position to curb any bad behavior or egos, and they're just trying to pull for a team ethos. Maybe this is me being optimistic. I don't know. But surely if there were red flags and they thought that this person wouldn't be able to sustain and thrive within our organization, they wouldn't have picked him. So I'm thinking that this is the likes of Gayson Williams, as we've mentioned many times, thinking that they will be able to control the herd, as it were, and be able to make sure that they operate to the best of their ability or as close to as possible.
I think as well, you look at Adam Gase, he's a coach who's renowned for just kicking players out if they become a problem. You see it, saw it with, even though he wasn't much of a problem, you saw it with Jay Ajayi, you saw it with a couple other players in Miami, he just got rid of them. He was like, no, can't be bothered with this. I'm going to clean my hands of you guys and you guys can leave. And he traded them. And I think that if they were as bad as they come across as being, I can't see why Gase would have chosen them. But obviously, it's McCagnan's draft. But I think at the same time, he's going to see that that Gase won't use them if they're going to be a problem. I think in general, the Jets fans and sort of the press are making a bit of a mountain out of a molehill of this whole situation.
It is typical of this time of year, isn't it? That, you know, you're going into the unknown with players you can only judge from what analysts have given you in the games you've seen in college football. It's, you know, it's so easy to bandy around and hype up puff piece stories that say, oh, once he stole a bag of Cheetos from a 7-Eleven when he was 15 and he's got personality problems or something stupid like that. At the end of the day, you've got to give them the chance to go in and see what they're made of and see whether it's sink or swim, isn't it? Whether they've got what it takes to compete and be effective at this level is completely different to college, you know? It's just hard this time of year. It's overthinking things at times, maybe with some people. It's trying not to be caught out further down the line and being aware of the situation now so that it's not such a massive surprise if something were to go wrong in the future. Again, there are players on the flip side that have come out of college and had a squeaky clean resume and then just, you know, the fame, the fortune, the cancers in the locker room that have they've got closer to have affected them, and they've been bust. So, you know, it can go either way. It's a double-edged sword. So
yeah. So moving on to the third day of the draft, and these picks aren't ever really expected to be a massive kind of star in the NFL. And the first pick on the third day came in the fourth round, and a lot of fans were like, "What? Who?" Whereas a lot of people inside the NFL loved the pick, and that was tight end Trevon Wesco. So what do you guys think? I mean, I didn't even register the fact that we'd taken a tight end. I didn't understand it at all, but there's a lot more going into it now.
I can see it if we're going to play a two tight end set. Obviously, we need a blocker. I can see how he could be that. I don't get why you take a tight end in the fourth round when we already have a tight end. Who we drafted last year. I don't get it. I'm not a fan of it, to be honest. We could have got a blocking tight end in free agency after the draft. We don't really need to go after a guy in the fourth round of the draft. And I understand we're not really going to find anyone who's going to fill holes at this point. But at the same time, you're better to take a punt at someone who could have that potential to become something over a guy who's seen as a blocking tight end who can kind of catch.
I
think at this stage in the draft, you start approaching the area where it's diamonds in the rough. And obviously, you know, he, as Seb said, you know, NFL people in the NFL, people with a hell of a lot more knowledge than we have looked at this guy and realized that there is a lot of potential there. And it's difficult because you're kind of swinging in the dark at this point, and you're more limited on the information you have as to, you know, their consistency when they're falling into the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. You know, that's why they're not higher up. You know, and he's from what we've seen, I've watched some of his tape purely on YouTube. Tried to put in the hype videos and gone more for the analysis. He does look like a solid blocking tight end. I mean, personally, in my head, I always keep it recently as if you're better than Joe Samaro, you're doing all right. So, I mean, I know that's a low bar, but at the same time, you know, if he can come in for certain plays and be able to buy Sam some time with his blocking, then I'm all for it. Yes, it's a reach. Yes, you could, like Ross said, you could have picked up a blocking tight end further on in the draft. But, you know, there's obviously some thought that he is, when it comes to blocking, better than the rest. And they've obviously got an idea in how they want to play next season. So, I know. I mean, again, it's another one of those, let's wait and see. See if he sets anything on fire in pre-season and go from there. I mean, obviously, they're going to know well before that whether he's got the ability. Yes, we've already got a tight end that has been playing very well. So he's going to have to maybe expand his game somewhat if he wants to get more playing time. But if there's certain schemes where he can come in and really lock down one side and keep it safe for Sam, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, like when I first saw the pick, I'd done the research into it. And as you lot said, I mean, he's not a great receiving threat. He's had 28 receptions in his entire college career and 26 of them all came last season. But then I kind of went onto Twitter and I was like, surely I'm not the only one that's confused like this. And you had Brian Baldinger saying, this is the baby Gronk. And you had others calling him a Swiss Army knife. And you had all of these like scouts and coaches saying like, this is a massive pick. There were other teams like slamming their pads down on the in the war rooms because he'd come off the board. And I was like, what am I not seeing here? So I'm hoping that, as you said, Yusuf, I'm hoping that these people obviously know a lot more than we do. They obviously know what they're doing. We only see the stats. We only see whatever our untrained eyes see. So they obviously have a lot of belief in this kid. So
I mean, looking at him alone, he looks like he's built like Gronk. So that's a start, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
He is a walking wardrobe, that man. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so moving on to the last two picks, we had Blake Cashman, a linebacker in the fifth round, and Blishwan, I think I've said that right, Austin, in the sixth, cornerback, another knee. Do you think either of these will make an impact on the Jets?
Cashman apparently was graded as one of the top inside linebackers in the class at the start of the year before the season began. So yeah, I think Cashman's a steal at where we got him. Obviously, there's reasons as to why he's fallen that far in the draft, but fallen that far down everyone's boards from the start of the season till now. But to be a guy who is ranked as one of the best to fall at us at the fifth round, I'd take that. I'd bite your hand off for it. Guys can have a down year and they can come back and have good years. And the guy's name's Bless Austin.
I mean, with the Cashman pick, there's one stat that really stands out to me. In 2018, he had a 0% missed tackle rate. He did not miss a single tackle out of 104. He did not miss a single tackle.
Jesus.
He's got to have something to him.
I didn't actually know that stat. That's impressive, no matter who you're playing against. I think you know, obviously at depth, obviously again it goes back to what we were saying in regards to previous players, that, you know, diamonds in the rough. But at the same time, as Ross has said, if they're grading well, they obviously know there's something good about them. And yeah, I'm going to stick by my guns and say that the coaching staff are confident in what they can do and how they can control things and how they can help develop these players further, even though other teams may have passed up on them in earlier picks. So, yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of this is wait and see. I know it's a crash generalisation to say, but, you know, when you start looking at the fifth and sixth round, it is wait and see. I'm sure when they New England picked a guy whose name shall not be mentioned, they were thinking that this is a bit hit or miss as well. And supposedly that turned out all right for them. So.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad pick, was it?
The only question I have about Cashman is we have three middle linebackers on the why another one?
Yeah.
It just seems a bit strange as to why we take an interior linebacker.
Yeah.
When we already have three of them on the roster. Even if we trade Darren Lee, we still have three on the roster then. When's he going to get game time?
Yeah.
And three, we're paying, two of which we're paying a lot of money to.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, obviously Darren Lee is going to go at some point, although his stay of execution seems to be going on and on and on. So, I mean, obviously they're waiting for the right time to trade him. I think maybe they feel that he can just improve to such a point that he forces his way up the roster. You never know. Or maybe it just fell to the fact that they felt that he was the best pick at the time, the best player in any position at that pick. And then they just went for value.
I think he probably was the best player available. The only other thing I can think is that they move Avery Williamson back to the position he played his last season in Tennessee, which was outside linebacker. Obviously, they moved him back to interior linebacker, but he was playing outside linebacker for a bit in Tennessee. That's the only thing I could think is they move him back to outside linebacker.
Do you think that would be a plus point for us if he was
when we signed? I envisioned him as being an outside linebacker because we didn't have one, and we drafted Darren Lee not too long ago. So I saw him coming in and moving outside. And staying there because he was an outside linebacker, I think, in his last season with Tennessee. So I could see him doing it again. Greg Williams likes to mess around with his defenses. So you never know. He could. If we're struggling with pass rush, he could always obviously move him outside. He was an all right pass rusher, I think, in Tennessee, but he wasn't special. But he could potentially be that with the defensive line we now have and the linebacker core we now have as well.
I think having pieces that can, like modular pieces that can slot into different areas when needed, you know, adds a certain new level of flexibility that we haven't really seen too often with the Jets. And maybe forward thinking and thinking slightly outside the box as well is something that these guys are bringing in and hoping that they can implement with these draft picks. Again, it may not be the case. They may just be thinking of aspects that we aren't even approaching because they know information about other players and they know information about other trade moves and whatever that's going to come up potentially in the future. But from my point of view, if it allows us to be more flexible and give different looks, I'm all for it. Again, I mean, we say this with minimal experience with this coaching staff with the Jets. We can only assess them by what they've done with their previous employers. So, you know, we are kind of trying to predict what these players are going to be used for by coaching staff that we haven't seen actually coach a game yet for the Jets. Yeah. So. It's gonna be interesting how they perceive certain players on our team. Maybe massive, well, hopefully, are massively different compared to the previous regime that we had with Todd Bowles. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, they may just be looking at it from a completely different angle, and hopefully, things work out for them. I mean, it's the NFL; there are going to be curveballs that come your way, and hopefully, they're just they're prepping for all eventualities.
Yeah, I mean, I think. What it comes down to in the fifth, sixth and seventh round, even the fourth, is that these players aren't going to come in and be a starter in the NFL straight away. So there's no point picking based on what the team needs because they're not going to be able to fill that need anyway. So you might as well pick the best player available, the best player you think is going to have a chance of actually being a top player in the NFL and just go with it. And I think that's what they've done there. I think it's not going, oh, this is what we need, this is who we're going to pick, because a fifth, sixth, they're not going to be able to fill that need anyway. So it'd be a wasted pick regardless.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think that all we can do is keep our optimism high and just believe in and back the system that is now in place.
Yeah. So moving on to the final part of the draft, which I always kind of find quite interesting, is the undrafted free agents. So obviously the Jets picked up, I think it was 16 in the end. Any of them catch your attention? Any of them you think that will make it?
Personally, I never hold out any real hope for undrafted free agents. I'm happy for them. I'm glad that they get their chance, but anybody on that list for me, I wouldn't. There's nobody I've come across that I feel could really push to make a big improvement to our side. Maybe there's some developmental players that have the potential, but anything that comes out of free agency, undrafted players, I think need to kind of prove it once preseason starts at the very earliest. You may hear good things coming out of mini camps and whatnot, saying, "Oh, this guy's shown a good turn of speed. This guy's reading the game well. This guy's got a good study habit." But unless it translates on the field, I mean, it's very hard to judge personally.
Yeah. I mean, there's one player that I think there's only one player that really caught my attention. Wide receiver Greg Dortch. Now, another need of the Jets was a returner, and this guy, he's a very good returner, to put it that way. He got a load of honors in college. He's a very small receiver. He's only 5'9", but he's got the speed. I mean, yeah, he received All-American honors in his final season as a returner. So I think if anyone's going to make a difference, I think it might be him. But other than that, as you said, Yusuf, I mean, we don't have a clue who these guys are going to end up being.
Well, I mean, I like Jabril Fraser. 138 tackles, 24.5 tackles for loss and 18 sacks for his career with Boise State. Isn't bad for an outside linebacker. And the fact he's an undrafted free agent, I think he could easily fit into that rotation. I mean, who have we got right now outside linebacker? We've got Polite, Jenkins, Brandon Copeland, Frankie Louvu. There's a place there for him to slot in, at least, just to even make a couple snaps a game, just to build up some confidence, build up some potential, just get to that point where he could potentially be a starting outside linebacker.
I think with his college stats at Boise that you just said, that the first thing that screams to me is work ethic. I think the guy doesn't know.
Yeah,
his screams doesn't sound like he rests on his laurels. He doesn't know when he's beaten. He sounds like a grinder, a real hard worker. And yeah, maybe he's got fundamentals that he can sharpen up on. Again, I don't know personally, but those numbers alone, why not? Why not? If he's gone through the draft and he hasn't been picked, then sign him up. You know, what are you going to lose?
No. And I heard a lot of people talk about the Appalachian State running back we got as well. What's his name? Is it Jalen Moore?
Okay, yeah.
I heard a lot of people talk about him as the undrafted free agents came in. A lot of people were talking about him. So I mean, you never know. We have been lucky with undrafted free agents before. Wayne Corbett being probably the most famous example. So I mean, you never know. They could come in and just be guys who are, who are just unbelievable and can do things for us.
This is the first time in about five seasons, where I'm gagging to watch the preseason games. Yeah. I just want to judge them.
You have to remember as well
and see what they've got. I mean, with the hope of improving this season, which shouldn't be overly difficult considering the last 2 years.
Yeah. You have to remember as well, we were the first team to really sign the sort of top undrafted free agents that were available, and that's not just we're the worst team, so the undrafted free agents all go there. Usually, undrafted free agents go to teams that they have the need at the position that they're at, or that's a position that they think they can fill into, and they're good. They're a team that they think can be good. So if these undrafted free agents all think the Jets can be a good team this season coming up, or in a couple of years, that's only bodes well for us as well, because their agents are going to be telling them to go to a team that can win at.
Yeah. And finally, I mean, it was quite a short draft of the Jets, 6 picks. There was not a lot of drama, really. But what grade would you give this Jets draft?
After you, Ross.
I'd probably a B+. Say probably a B+. I think if you want to take it into account of a draft to fill needs, we again haven't really filled many needs other than with Ja'Kai Polite, stuff like that. But we did best player available, and we got some steals, a lot of steals, if you believe the reporters. Cashman's a steal, Polite's a steal. We arguably got the best player in the draft at 3, so realistically another steal. So I think we've done quite well in our draft in regards to who we've drafted. I think that just in regards to needs, we still haven't got a centre. It's a problem. We haven't really got outside offensive linemen. So I'd probably give it a B+.
Yeah.
I think that's probably fair.
I'm in around the B mark as well. I mean, you have to take Quinnen Williams out of the equation for me, because you would have to be drunk at the wheel not to take him at 3. Yeah, I mean, everybody knew coming into this draft it was going to be Kyler Murray, Bosa, Williams, and so I just take that pick and put it to one side, because there was no way it was going to play out any other way for me as those 3 picks being the first 3. I don't care what the puff pieces were saying, where they were thinking that somebody may, like San Francisco, may trade out 2, or Kyler Murray might not get picked at 1. No, we all knew months ago that was going to be the case. So take away Quinnen Williams. Look at the rest of the draft. Like Ross said, there's only one, maybe 2 areas of actual need that were kind of considered, and a lot of it has just been best player at that point. So they're getting a B from me. It may improve if the picks in the latter rounds pan out, but for this at the moment, it's a B. Can't argue. Got to be happy with the fact that they didn't let an ego kick in and they went and picked someone else apart from Quinnen Williams. So yeah, I'm gonna go with a B personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same ballpark, maybe a bit lower, maybe even a B- for me, only because, I mean, I've got nothing against all the picks that were made. I think they're all quite good picks. But I don't feel like anything was given to help Darnold. I mean, I know it was done in free agency, but there were some good receivers on the board that we kind of passed up on. And I think that could have been an area that, I mean, the Jets are historically pick defense. And I think maybe they could have broken that trend a bit, especially towards like the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th rounds. I think we should have gone a bit more offensive. But I mean, yeah, the picks we've made, I don't think you can complain with any of them too much, really.
Yeah. And the rumours around the trade up in the second round were again for a defensive player. We were rumoured to be going for a corner. So realistically, what could you do about that? I suppose our identity has always been a defensive team. We've never really been an offensive powerhouse. So, and it's worked for us before. And as they say, defense wins championships. But maybe, yeah, there are holes that we didn't fill.
Maybe
so.
We got a new sack exchange for this season. You know, fingers crossed anyway.
Before we go, I want to talk about something else that I haven't brought up and just remembered. I wonder if the two of you had seen Mark Sanchez's prediction for the next season.
Wasn't it 13-3?
He did 13-3. He did 13-3. He had us beating the Patriots at home, as in our home, in MetLife. He had us losing to the Bills away. He had us losing to Oakland as well at home. And he had us losing to the Patriots in Foxborough. And we won all the rest of the games, including against the Browns on...
I read about this. I haven't actually seen the video, but I knew he peaked 30. I knew he'd slated us for 13-3. Was he on Good Morning Football or was he on Sunday in the Afternoon? Because for me, this screams liquid lunch. And then someone's dropped out.
It wasn't Good Morning Football. It wasn't Good Morning Football. And I watched it. He tried to make it 14-2. And the guy was just like, nah, we're not having this. And he put one under as a loss, and he was still like, well, But Fumble Over Here says it's going to be 13-3. Who wants to listen to this guy?
I mean, the funny thing is that, I mean, Mark Sanchez has to have a place in every Jets fan's heart somewhere. When I watched that, yeah. I actually thought, you know what? He's actually going to be brilliant on TV. He was a laugh. He kind of engaged everyone. I mean, personally, I don't think he was being realistic enough. We're going to go 15-1. But
I think we've learned post butt fumble that the guy doesn't take himself too seriously. Something like that could crush players. But he.
Well, he didn't. He didn't before it either. I remember him eating a hot dog in the sidelines.
Oh my god! He
was the perfect quarterback for New York, and it was just a shame that he just wasn't good enough. Unrealistic expectations of the Jets next season. Yeah. If we go 13-3, I mean, I'll be more than happy.
I'm ringing him to pick my lottery numbers.
If we go 13-3, I will walk to New York. I will swim across the Atlantic and I will walk there from London.
Jesus.
I mean, it's been great talking with you guys. I hope everyone's enjoyed the listen and looks forward to us going 13-3.
Hey.
Great speaking to you guys. See you later.
Cheers.
Bye.